Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
You are listening live to the program. Your teams, your town, your program.
The good thing about the wide receiver position, this is typically every year, is they provide depth really 1 through 5, and there's always, you know, pockets of players. I think there's a large group of receivers in the first 50 picks, I think, that we have great grades on. And then I think there's another pocket right behind that. For the tackle position, I think once you get past like pick 35 or 40, most of those guys are gone. So if you're picking in the top 10, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking in the top 15, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking 32 and 64, you got a shot, maybe?
Like 1 out of 100?
I'd say more like 1 out of 1,000,000.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
And now, wrapping up his 17th mock draft, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a sun-splash but chilly Friday. Great to have a lot of things going on right now. Royals baseball, competitive Royals baseball, NBA play-in games, Chiefs presser about the draft. What are we going to do? I don't know. I think we got the blueprint laid out to us, didn't we? Brett Veach pretty much just said, we're taking this guy.
Yeah.
After we trade up for
That guy.
And I always love it when they just lay the whole blueprint out there.
It's amazing.
Please don't tweet.
Yes.
Don't tell anyone. We don't want to ruin the surprise. Certainly don't want to tip off the competition.
I'm saying.
But the whole blueprint was pretty much just laid out there, near as I can tell.
Yep.
But I've been doing this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard big trade up for Joe Alt. That's what I heard.
That's what I heard, too.
I mean, listen, you got to have a discerning ear like you and I do.
Yeah. And the ability to believe anything you want to believe.
That's right.
And an extraordinary desire to see that happen.
Sure. Bingo. Here we sit.
Yeah.
So Joe Alt will be a Chief here 1 week from today.
Yep. Well, I can't wait to hear his press conference, his phone call, his conference call with the KC media.
Going to be 25 million questions. Hey, do you know your dad played here? Hey, do you know your dad play here?
To hear Adam.
Hey, your dad used to play here.
To hear Adam Teicher ask a question and then go, okay. Completely unimpressed.
As he's going down his list
okay.
of what he's going to ask next. You get off Adam Teicher's
backside. I love the Teich, man.
Teich bag?
Yes. He was busting the GM's chops a little bit today about the number of players on his board.
Which, okay, let's start right there. Do we have, let's see.
I don't have him busting his chops, but I have him answering that question.
About 221?
Yes, that is number 7.
All right, let's start right there. We are going to start with Brett Veach and his comments today. We'll open up the phone lines. Busy day today, you know, as they always are. As the program is professionally put together by one Adam Dravetta. So not a lot of time for grab ass, people.
Ably constructed.
But we do like to keep the first hour and other moments, I'd say today, our first hour, 2 o'clock hour, and post 2-minute drill in the 4 would be your time to be a part of the conversation. We'll see how quickly we get through some of the topics we want to get through. But you can grab a phone line. We always enjoy your calls at 913-810-810, 913-810-810. We're doing well. So, you know, do have a point.
Right.
Right? So we're good. Hope you're good. Well, let's have a point.
Bring something to the table.
What number did you say it was?
7.
7. Danny Klingsky will be with us here in the 3 o'clock hour, 2-minute drill at 4. Kevin Harlan and the 5.
Mm-hmm. Voice of America.
That, near as I can tell, is...
That's a full day.
I was going to say, what are we looking at? 300 pounds a guest? If we don't count the drill.
Right.
Which is Danny and Kevin.
Yeah.
$180 for Kevin.
$120 for you.
$120 for Clink.
That's about right.
You're putting a lot on Danny.
Depends on how much Danny is, how many shirts he has on.
I would like to start doing that. Can we?
I finally hit triple digits this week.
Can we start assessing the weight of the guests at the beginning of the program? Announce 1,700 pounds of guests.
Yep.
Like everyone who comes on has to disclose their weight,
height and weight. And with Danny, it would be two different weights. It would be like whatever he is under normal circumstances, and then 6'10" whenever he finally decides to stand up straight.
Like to get his hand measurement, his arm length, and the spirit of the draft.
Straight one of these days, and we're going to go, my God, Danny, you're 7 feet tall. You've just been slouching this whole time.
There are three offensive tackles with 36-plus inch arms in this draft. Mm-hmm. Love to see Danny. 21-inch arms. And I'm not talking about the bicep, by the way. It's not the old Hulk Hogan. What did he claim? 24-inch pythons?
Something like that. Brother.
I'm talking about length.
Yeah.
What do you think? 6-8 inches around?
Probably so.
Okay.
Regardless of where
you... See Danny giving the...
You can start at his wrist and go up to his shoulder. Same number all the way. Pipe cleaner.
You can say that when you're a mountain of a man.
True.
Like you. Others fear the wrath of Danny Klinkscale.
I am a mountain because I'm large and I don't move.
All right. You are, yes. You are growing like a mountain.
Yeah.
But you can't see it if you just sit and stare at it. It takes time. I like that. Let's start with some Brett Veach. Let's get into it. I thought there were a number of interesting things. No, Brett Veach did not tell us who they're going to take. But there are some interesting things to take away from it. And let's begin with number 7. Not on our list. It's just in order.
We had a plan.
We don't have a top 10.
About 2 hours ago.
We're going with 7.
And went, let's do this.
Well, we knew this would end up taking center stage. But we'll get to some of the other stuff later. Let's start with Brett Veach on how many players are on the board. Nick Jacobs from KSHB, 41, and a scowl.
Mm-hmm.
He's an old football player.
You can tell.
He looks like he might fire out at you at any time as well.
Yes.
One of the nicest guys
Absolutely. You
ever going to meet. He's really the man. He allows Mick Schaefer to be the goof that he is. Because Jacobs does literally all the heavy lifting.
Yep. Anyone who's been down there knows.
Yes. Anyway, Nick asked Veach how many players he has on his draft board.
I wrote that down. I knew someone was going to ask me that. Because I never know. I just see a bunch of names up there. I don't, like, count them. I sort of just move them around, and I have them in like, pockets. And but I was walking in here. I said, someone's going to ask me exactly how many guys I have on the board. So it's 221, which is a lot. But you'd have to come in here and be with me one day to see how I process this because – like I have guys in the 6th or 7th round on my board, but I always know that we'll never get to the 6th and 7th round. So the total number of boards, total number of players on the board, 221. But in my mind, there's kind of like a line right there. And those guys in 6 and 7, we keep on the board because that's where I want to work down on free agency. And so I know where I'm going. As soon as the draft's over, the guys that we had on the board at 6 and 7, again, we'll have plenty of numbers. We'll never get to them, but that's my free agency board. And that's kind of how we work through that.
Okay. Takeaway there is what?
My first thought was, let us all invite us in someday. If you were here to watch me, I'm like, can we arrange that?
Yes. And what time?
I think it would.
Tomorrow?
Is noon good?
Got an oil change, but I can move it around.
amount of planning. I think the fact that we draw the line, the 6th and 7th round guys we have, we'll never get to. That's I don't know if I've heard a GM just come out and say that.
Okay, well, 221.
221.
Let's put that into context. That's all he has on his board. There are only 221 people that they will consider trading. Let me put it into context for you, because some people that may just be an ambiguous number. Well, that's plenty. I mean, they couldn't possibly take all of them. How many guys were drafted last year? Jackie, it's on you. How many do you think in the entire draft, seven rounds last year? Because these two idiots will try to figure it out for me. You, I can count on the honest answer of youth and inexperience. How many do you think are actually drafted last year? How many players total, whole draft?
Say five.
More than 10. Seven rounds.
Actually, no, because I looked it up earlier when you said 221.
244.
All right, good job.
Close.
Good job. Really close. Right? If you just had 32 in each round, right? Quick math would get you to 244. Kid's a mathematician.
He is.
There are compensation picks for losing in free agency, which you add that on, sandwich picks after the third, fourth, and fifth round, 259 players were taken. The Chiefs, by the way, do have a seventh-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to pick in that seventh round, yet he only has 221 on his board. And even more so, later on, if you heard that whole press conference, I don't know if we played it live or not, but if you heard that whole press conference, he said, Adam gave him grief, said John Dorsey would give you a hard time for having 221. He said, I know, because Dorsey never would have that many. Right? So they don't have enough guys on their board if every one of their guys are taken in order. If everybody, they're gone, they're done. They, yep. God, who are we going to take in the seventh? And then on top of that, he said, well, I know full well we're not going to get to any of the guys that we have in the sixth and seventh round, which I think is interesting, because it kind of speaks to the fact there are, I've talked to a number of different people on how they do their draft system. And some do it by a 10-point scale, a 6-point scale. They have different ways, colors, different things. Some do it by a round scale. Right? If you, well, he's a first-rounder, a second-rounder. I kind of, the people I've talked to who don't do it that way, I like their line of thinking. Sounds like he does a round scale, a scale that's based upon first-rounder, second-rounder, third-rounder. Right? Now, I think you'll quickly find that he's got what we always say, 10 to 25 real first-round picks. And then a bunch of seconds. He doesn't have 32 of these, 32 mm-hmm. of these, 32 of these. Right? So in a way, it's not. But I always feel like when you do it by round, you somewhat are looking to find 32 in each one. Right? Oh, we got 2 minutes. We got to bump him down. I always kind of like the one that's just maybe a 10-point scale. Right? And you'll see different things like Matt Miller. Local guy who does great work for ESPN. He has a 100-point scale, right? So the best prospect ever would be 100, and he's got a way to grade it. One of the things I like about doing it that way, if you've got a scale that is not beholden to rounds, you can measure this year's draft versus last year's draft. We've covered a lot of times. I've talked to a lot of GMs. No GM has a great blueprint for next year. They're busy on this year. They know a couple of guys. Yes, Marvin Harrison Jr. last year, they knew was going to be badass this year. But they know this guy is going to be a fifth rounder next year? No, they don't. They haven't got that far. Superstars, yes. But that's it, a handful of guys. They are preoccupied. Going to the nth degree, knowing what they have in this year's draft. So really that scale at least gives you doesn't give you a feeling of what's this year versus next year. You'll hear some draft pundits try to tell you next year's draft is way better. They're 100% completely full of it and factor everything they say with an ounce of BS. Take their opinion times BS equals what I actually value it as. Because they definitely don't. If a whole team of people doesn't have time to give you a good evaluation of next year's draft, then one jackass definitely doesn't. Okay? They'll have an idea on a handful of guys, but that's it. But what it does do is give you a chance to grade this scale, this draft, against previous drafts, if you use the same scale and you don't change your scale. Now, I think teams are always evolving based upon personal experiences, based upon which are not just their draft picks, but other teams' draft picks and what happens, right? Well, the way the league evolves. At one time, running backs were very high. All these draft things have begun to knock them down, right? But there was a time where the draft board, even the great Jimmy Johnson, who was the first guy to really embrace the trade chart and valuing draft picks, took a running back in the 20s of the first round. He drafted Emmitt Smith. Whoa, he was the greatest running back of all time. Says only you. He's the all-time leading rusher of all time. But a lot of people tell you, well, he could have done even better. He valued the fact that Herschel Walker wasn't worth to his team what he could be in picks, but then he turned around and used a pick on Emmett. He probably should have slid down. That's where teams have gotten even smarter than where Jimmy Johnson was. My point is it's always evolving. It's always changing as the game changes. As the passing games become more important, the running back has become less important, right? And the running back skills are different. You better be able to catch the ball, which is what Bijan Robinson could do at Texas, but for some reason can't do under Arthur Smith.
He's going to throw the ball.
That's why Arthur Smith is now the offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh and no longer the head coach in Atlanta, because even that guy couldn't figure out how to get the football into the hands of a running back that they took in the top 10. And I'm not just pissed because I had him in fantasy football. This is an accurate analysis.
He's also a Falcons fan.
Yeah, not so much.
I would say if there's someone out there who does a weekly video in which they make fun of people who are idiots and you're in it every week, I'm talking about Andy Hagar, you've probably done a bad job.
Yeah.
Because that was the punchline across the league, was his ridiculous use of his offensive talent.
I mean, listen, I know there's a few people putting their hand up going, Jahmyr Gibbs, sir? I'd like to nominate Jahmyr Gibbs for co-star, you know? He also didn't get probably the usage you would expect for taking a guy that high.
On the topic of how many guys Veach may or may not have in a given round, do you think we take into account that there's, and maybe not just Veach, any team, when they're putting the draft board together, do we factor in that maybe some teams aren't looking at a given position, and I mean quarterback in this one, but there might be other teams that haven't even bothered looking at a certain spot because they feel pretty set there.
Yeah.
So I
think quarterback might be the only one.
That could be. And he said, and Veach said today, 16 to 18 is the number of guys he had on first round picks. But I would hazard a guess they probably haven't even looked at the incoming quarterback. So if he did, that number might be into the 20s.
16 to 18 first round picks.
That's what he said they had.
Right. And probably because, yes, all the quarterbacks are out of there. So that's upwards of six more.
Yeah, which is still
a minimum of three more.
Yeah,
two. I'd say four. I think J.J. McCarthy's going to go there.
Hovering around 67% of the first round.
Which would get us to 22. We mentioned in the Mel Kiper and Field Yates mock draft, nine offensive tackles went. Now, he's acknowledging to you that at pick 32, if our board comes off the way we see it, we're not going to get a guy. It's not going to happen, right? That's yep. Clearly one of the things he's putting out there. So I think that is something that's interesting to, you know, keep in mind and how the board's going. Now, they're going to have some guys, you know, and when you don't want somebody, it's easier to not see them as a first-round pick, right? I think quarterback's the only position that you can be like, we got Mahomes, we don't need one. Not up there. They have quarterbacks. And I think they'll be around probably in that sixth, seventh round, like, which is what it took for the Patriots to finally go, we gave $100 million to Drew Bledsoe, but we're going to take Tom Brady because we had him back up here in the third. So in the sixth, we're taking him. But I think it's of note, we're never going to draft these sixth and seventh guys. We have them there so we know who to get on the phone with and call immediately. So how many are sixth and seventh? I don't know. More than one. He said plural. So at least two.
At least two.
But I want you to understand, there's really only, in all likelihood, of draftable guys for the Kansas City Chiefs, 150 guys. And that's five rounds. And they're not going to run out of people. No. And that's one of the things I mentioned this a couple of days ago that Field Yates said when he did this. I think it was the first time he's ever done this exercise with Mel Kiper of drafting down the third round. He said, I was shocked at how quickly we split off. And I'm going to tell you, and we'll talk about it next week because we're doing some background on it. But you will see that's like if you just put in Matt Miller's draft board with the way Field Yates and Mel Kiper mock draft, you'll be like Matt Miller was giggling at some of the picks. And Mel Kiper and Field Yates were giggling at some of Matt Miller's draft board. But after about the first round guys, we come down a little bit, and then whoa. Because they don't need to go that deep. But if you do any kind of draft, you do our player pool, our NCAA player pool. We draft, what do we end up drafting? 240 players.
Yep.
We used to in the day. Now I have a spreadsheet I make for everybody that literally every player in the tournament is on it. Mm-hmm. So it's an all-encompassing spreadsheet. Back in the day when there was no Excel spreadsheet and no internet, and we used to do this by hand off the USA Today stats of every team in college basketball, we made a list of 180 for a 240-person draft, and we never ran out. We never ran out. Because no matter what it is you do, you start going in different directions. You know it. How many times do you sit there in your fantasy draft? He took that dumbass. Wasn't even on my board. Why would he? I'm not taking him. Why is he taking him? Rookie receiver hadn't done squat for that team in 3 years. And that guy's a third-round pick. I'm not touching him. Somebody else, read some snitch. Oh, really like how he looks in camp. Explosive out of his breaks. Leaps high above, you know, whatever. Right? But there you got tangible proof. That's the draft board. The draft board is not 500 guys long. Matt Miller's is almost 500 long. Go to some of the draft guides. There's that many. Part of it's because they're not picking a team. They're providing a book, a layout, a website, a web page to try to get you to come click on it. Mm-hmm. And you want every player that might be taken, which means they got to try to figure out 32 teams' draft boards and come up with the guys that are going to be everywhere. And I guarantee you there will be guys, because I do it every year, crossing off names on some of the most comprehensive draft things that are out there. And there's a guy that I got to go Google. Oh, God, he's not even on here. Who is this guy? From a team that only had 150 guys on their list. Didn't make a 500-person draft board.
Yep.
It's an inexact science, is what we're getting at here. But I think it's of note. They have what they're looking for. The other thing that makes that so true is there are wideouts that don't fit their scheme. Right? I'm going to tell you. Remember Loquan Treadwell?
Yes.
I'll throw some love
Ole Miss
to the Chiefs organization. I won't say who. But when he came out of Ole Miss, he went like 21 or 2 mm-hmm. to the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know that he was even on the Chiefs board. I said, how about Loquan Treadwell? Can't run. I think he was still kind of hanging on somewhere a year or two ago, but he's not fast. He certainly didn't warrant a first-round pick. They had a type, and that guy wasn't it. Maybe in the seventh round, they'd have doubled back to him. Maybe as a college free agent. That's a guy's at first round. And I'm going to tell you, based upon the conversations that I had, they weren't even considering him, and he went in the first round. That's how different the opinions will be in this draft. 913-3810-810. Rodney's lined up first. He wants to talk draft. We want to hear some more from Brett Beach, what he had to say. I think there's some insightful stuff here. 913-3810-810.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Program's off and running here on a Friday. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Grab a phone line right now, 913-3810-810. Hit me up on the Twitter, at SorenPetro, S-O-R-E-N-P-E-T-R-O, if you're so inclined, of the tweet variety. You're a tweet variety type, right?
Absolutely, in more ways than one. I was just checking out the draft order, and something I'd forgotten about. The Legarius Sneed trade included a swap of sevenths with Tennessee. The Chiefs trading the last pick of the seventh round for the first pick of the seventh round. The Chiefs' final draft pick is number 221. That's sure it's a coincidence. That's the number of players on his board.
Is it really?
Or is it? Yeah.
Oh.
I thought, well, they're going to be 30 short. I was like, wait, how come they don't own it? What the? Oh. They swapped sevenths. So the Chiefs moved up 31 spots in the seventh round. Could that be why it's 221, or is that just a coincidence?
It may have been that he said, let's just go ahead and round it out.
Let's just cut it off there because we know we can't.
They're not going to get there.
No, not even close. As you said, he doesn't expect they'll get there because he's got sixth and seventh round guys. He's already got a line before.
But here is one.
The 150 number is probably more accurate.
I'll give you the cautionary tale of doing it the way I prefer. Bo Peep Keys. When you trade next year's sixth for this year's seventh, because you have Bo Peep Keys rated as a fourth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's still there. I guarantee you he had him rated as a fourth or fifth, probably beyond a fifth, when he says, well, I know we're not going to get to our fifths and sixths. So Bo Peep Keys was a guy a couple of years ago. They traded from the seventh into the sixth because they had him graded up there. Right?
Yep.
Well, we love this guy. He didn't do anything.
No.
He's still kicking around the league.
Yeah.
But he didn't do anything for the Chiefs. 913-3810-810. Let's go to the phones. Rodney, you're in the program. What's up, Rodney?
What's going on, Saran? It's been a while.
It has. It's good to hear from you, brother. What's going on?
So I remember a while ago, we talked, last time I was on, we talked about tackles. And I mentioned that a lot in my Chiefs podcast with a couple of guys. And we were doing some mock drafts, and I noticed the D-tackle out of Illinois keep falling to 32.
Jershon or let me look him up.
I think his name is Newton. I think it's Newton.
Yeah.
Jershon Newton.
Mm-hmm. But I think that would be a question for next week for him. But my real question is this. Now, the wide receivers you have in the second – that you got to have a second-round grade on. Is there any wide receiver that you will be willing to reach for with a second-round grade at pick 32? Because I only have one guy that I can think of to me, and then that's Xavier Leggett. That's just my opinion. With his size and his ability and skill set, especially what he had to deal with, you know, trying to make lemonade with pineapples and watermelon and Spencer Rattler, I think he'll be a great fit. I'm an Hall of Fame quarterback, and I think he can literally take over one side of the field.
Listen,
I just wanted to hear your point on that.
Yeah, and you know, Rodney, you're preaching to the choir on Spencer Rattler. We talked about that going into his last year at OU, that he was one of the guys, I'll give love to the Cover 3 podcast, one of those guys was saying they thought he was one of the most overrated quarterbacks in college football. That was long before he ever left OU, that he was really a product of checkdowns and talent around him getting things done. But he is still, on some people's board, the seventh best quarterback in this draft. Now, some people think he
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know who I'd put, because I haven't spent a lot of time looking at quarterbacks. I will, because I think the Chiefs would probably like to find a good prospect, and one that, for me, my dream, as I've said for many years, find a guy who can run it, too, that you can bring in for the quarterback sneak and play that and have him at least be able to make a toss. That would be my dream scenario. But for a wideout that... You know, Ladd McConkey, I think we're hearing his name so much, and maybe it's because, you know, us, and I think Steven likes him a lot. I think he's mentioned him on the morning show as well. I think we've heard his name a lot around here. We don't think of him as a second rounder, but a lot of things still put him in the second round. I would be thrilled to get him at 32. I mean, the list of wideouts, let's put it this way. Marvin Harrison, yes. Roma Dunze, yes. Malik Nabers, yes. Brian Thomas, yes. Adonnell Mitchell, yes. Xavier Worthy, no. Looking down a draft board of wideouts. Ladd McConkey, yes. I need to watch more of the little films on Xavier Leggett. I do like the strength and size. He looks kind of A.J. Brownish in the big physical nature of things. But
see, my only thing on Xavier Leggett is that he had to come back for the ball a ton. He had to come back for it. He had to turn and make a play instead of, you know, he only had a handful of passes that was – he was able to catch and start when he turned the biggest highlight was he turned a 5-yard slant into a 70-yard touchdown and just outran the whole entire defense.
Right,
lot of passes, even just with Spencer Rattler, was literally behind him.
And I think there's two things. Are people looking at him going, oh, he looks a lot like Rashee Rice, really good run after catch, which is not traditionally what the Chiefs have wanted. It's what I think they're evolving to as they've watched teams try to take away. And with the, listen, Mecole Hardman was a successful second-round pick, but he didn't blossom into being a star. And so I think they realize, okay, it's not just track speed. We like him to run through some arms, which Rashee Rice does. Leggett obviously has that ability. But, you know, Leggett, what I want to see more of and what I need to, you know, and I haven't done it yet this week, I should have, is he just Kadarius Toney? right? Because Kadarius Toney at Florida got a lot of glorified long handoffs and would make guys miss and get downfield. And that is not translated in the NFL. Like, that's great that you have that club in your bag, but if you can't stretch the field, if you can't go run a real route, if you can't run a 10-yard in, if you can't run a post, if you can't run a flag and make those legitimate routes work, then they sit up on you. And so what do we watch him do? We watch him get the ball out to him, and wow, look at him. He made three guys miss. And the fourth guy tackles him, and he gained 2.7 yards because the whole defense knows he's not going downfield. So can Leggett run a route? Because you're going to have to run a route for the Chiefs offense to be everything it can be. Rashee Rice could run a route, right? Can he run a go route? Not what we saw last year until they just started sitting on everything short. Then he beat them in one of the big plays coming down the stretch.
Yeah, gets a big one.
But so, you know, Leggett's name is there. I think there are a lot of traits to like. The question is, can he really run routes? Because Andy Reid's going to give you routes that if you run them, he will get you wide open. But if you can't run them, and God forbid you can't catch at the end of them, which we saw Kadarius Toney not catch at the end of the real routes he actually ran against the Detroit Lions in the opener, then you're screwed.
And how much do they care about the age of the player? 23, 21, 20. I mean, Rashee Rice.
Huge.
Rashee Rice was 23.
Which is old on their board.
He turned 23 right after the draft, or April 22nd of last year. He'll be 24 in 3 days. Leggett turned 23 in January. Someone like Xavier Worthy, he will be 21 in about a week. Now, he's not the same type of player, but I'm not sure what the age of a player does, but Leggett does seem to be a little older than they tend to like for athletic position players.
I've caught on to that when he mentioned the NIL deal, how some guys are staying longer in college than they normally be, and so now that makes me think that to me, that changes everything. I think that changes from a lot of positions that I never considered the age.
Well, and it's a baseball thing, and an NBA thing, which has made its way. And listen, to Brett Beach's credit, he's always been sharp on that because, you know, you still have ceiling, right? If guys are still, if they're playing at this level and, you know, they're 20, just turned 21. I mean, there's a number of the offensive tackles that were 20 last season. They've turned 21 since the season and are now eligible for the draft. That is, you know, something that where you're like, okay, well, whatever they are now, already playing at that level, there's still more growth and athleticism for them to achieve. And so that does become a big factor. It's a huge factor, too, in their free agency. Like, they don't sign 28-year-old guys. They sign 25-year-old guys.
Yeah. So now I have a second question for you. I've heard a lot of reports on Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers literally being neck and neck as far as talent. I know one is going to be in the top five. The other one is down at the bottom 10 of the first round. Where would the mark be for you to say, okay, let's try to get Brian Thomas and try to go after him?
Well, I think it's if they value him like one of the top wideouts, and Rodney, always good to hear from you, buddy. I appreciate it. If they value him like one of the top wideouts, what do we hear Brett Veach say today? You know, hey, are we ready to take a top five guy? Yes, we've been the last couple of years. If one of them slides into the teens, he said, you know, because he was asked the question point blank about it, kind of as a tackle. I think Matt Derrick asked him, do we have it? Would you be willing to trade up? Let's play it. So I'm going to let him hear Veach's number two.
Number two.
I think it was Matt Derrick. Yeah, it was Matt Derrick asked Brett Veach, you know, that subject. Like you said, listen, you went 27 to 10 to get Patrick Mahomes. Is there a scenario where you'll go 32 to 15 for a non-quarterback? Can you see yourself doing that?
I mean, I can envision myself. I mean, got to get the owner's approval on that. But, no, I think it changes every year. And I think we have a pretty good plan this upcoming week. But yeah, I think, listen, every situation is unique. I mean, we have had conversations in the last few years about guys that we consider top five, top six prospects if they were to fall into the teens moving up. And got Clark and Andy involved, and they were all in it, and those situations just didn't work out. So I think that I certainly could see something like that. A lot of things have to fall in place, though, for that to happen. So it would have to be the probably a specific guy or two, and then probably getting into a landing spot that's not expected. And then if he does get to that landing spot that's not expected, the team is willing to work with you on a trade. That makes sense. So certainly can see it. A lot of things have to happen and fall in place for to see an outcome like that. But I always think anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Now, 17, that's the same number of spots. It would be less expensive draft capital-wise to go 32 to 15 than 27 to 10 because the difference per slot is greater at the top than at the bottom. So, you know what I'm saying? There's a higher value between 10 and 15 than there is between 27 and 32. So they could get there for less than it took them to get Mahomes. But it didn't sound like he was – it's like a lot of things would have to fall perfectly into place for that to be a situation.
Let me give you – and it's more specific to the age group of things. Let me give you the ages – where am I? What position am I in here? Oh, I'm getting there. Hold on. Scrolling. One of the draft guides I have on my computer here. Hang on. They list the ages. I want to give you the ages of the offensive tackles. And you'll see what I mean by age being a big deal.
You think there's... Here we go. How many? There we go.
Okay. Joe Alt, 21.15. Fashanu, Penn State, 21.38. J.C. Latham, Alabama, 21.2. Talese Fuaga, 22.06, just turned 22. Amarius Mims, 21.53. Tyler Guyton, Oklahoma, 21.87. Patrick Paul, 21.27. Then after that, 22.48, 23.54, 21.89, 21.08. 22.23, 23.95, 24.02, 24.07. There's a decided age. You know, as you go down, they get older.
Almost all but one of them were under 22.
Because the truly elite separate themselves early on.
Yes.
Right? That's a big part of it. 913-3-810-810. Let's take a break. I don't want to get behind. Andrew, you'll lead us off next segment. 913-3-810.
Hey, everybody. Joe Spiker, owner of Easton Roofing here. For almost 10 years, we've been a locally owned and operated family business. At Easton, we work on every job with one thing in mind. Integrity matters. I grew up in Central Kansas, was raised on the values of respecting hard work. At Easton, we always make decisions based on the ethical, right thing for the customer. That's what integrity means to us. So if you have any questions about your roof, give me and my team a call. 913-257-5426. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
810-810, you're in the program. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us on a busy Monday. Danny Unleashed, brought to you by Easton Roofing, coming up next. Andrew, coming in the program right now. Andrew, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
Hey, I was listening to the press conference with Brett Veach, and I really thought about your question that you asked him first about, you know, Rashee Rice and the situation, and then looking at draft prospects, and if that affects, you know, where they put them or if they will draft them and stuff like that and situations like that.
Yep.
But my question, I've got two. My first question is, do you think that just the Rashee Rice incident has changed his board in regards to, you know, wide receivers and importance on that? Or do you think he just sticks with what they initially had going even before the incident occurred?
So let's start with the situation. Yeah, let's first of all, let me play it so that people can hear what it is you're talking about. What? Six. Okay. So I was like, I thought you're like break. I'm like, we just came back. This is Brett Veach. This is what Andrew's talking about. I asked him basically, I said, does a player like, you know, Sweat at Texas, who just got a DWI a week ago, with light of what's going on with Rashee Rice, do you have to take some guys off your board because of what's happened previous to now?
We spend a great deal of time on all these players, and, you know, I think we have to look at each individual case independently and just work through it. And, you know, I think maybe subconsciously, maybe it factors a little, but I think that when we stick to our process and you know, trust the guys that we have around us. I mean, we have a great coaching staff. We have a great personnel staff. We have, you know, a great security team. So we really lean on those guys. And, you know, at the end of the day, I trust the people around me. And, you know, they spend a lot of time working on the player and his ability to come in here and be a good person, be a good teammate. And so I think, you know, we try to stick to, you know, what we've done in the past. And, I mean, there'll always be some things that factor into ultimately what we decide to do with a guy. But I think sticking to our process, and we've done this now for, you know, a little bit here, and it over the long run, it's you know, provided us a good blueprint to work off of.
So, you know, first on the player at risk part, we'll get to the wide receiver. Does Rashi Rice being at risk, but the player at risk part that you're going to draft, does what happened with Rashi Rice change his opinion? What I heard there, you tell me if you heard different, Andrew, was no. He said maybe subconsciously because it's fresh, but and I'm going to be honest with you, that's smart because it means that they believe they have a good process. They don't believe they took a risk. Now, I had somebody tell me just today, well, there was no signs of red flags on Rashi Rice, and look what happened there. Actually, there were. At least I had one because I had one person tell me, good player, kind of a pain in the ass. That's it. That's all I was told, pain in the ass. I wasn't told, look out, he races all over town. He's definitely going to get pinched for weed someday. None of that. Right? I was just told, good player, he's a pain in the ass. All right? Yep. So, and if I heard that, Brett Beach heard that. So they did. And if they didn't hear that, then get new security people. Let me say that right now. Because it wasn't that hard for me to get that. So, but if he, right now he's like, if he had told me, to be honest with you, we're taking all those guys off the board, then it tells you that they never had a process in place to begin with to try to vet those players. And I think Rashi Rice may have been a first-round talent, but he was pushed down into the second because there's a little bit of a, there was a character flag. And just like you listen, and sometimes that burns you because I'm going to tell you there was a character flag, a neck flag, and I think it was a vertebrae. And there was one other, there were two medical red flags and a character red flag from another team I talked to on DK Metcalf. Right. And that's part of the reason why they took Mecole Hardman over DK Metcalf was there were flags on Metcalf. Now, to this point, DK Metcalf has not gone to jail. To this point, DK Metcalf has not had a serious injury. And so now everybody, we got one guy who calls five times a season and points out that Brett Beach didn't take DK Metcalf over Mecole Hardman. Well, this is the reason why he didn't. So listen, this is the time maybe they should have listened more to the red flags because they're burnt on Rashi Rice. There was another time that they did listen to the red flags, and DK Metcalf was a better player than Mecole Hardman. It's an inexact science. Now, to your point about taking a wideout, does this make it a higher priority? Yes. Yes, it does. How much so? The high priority is you have Patrick Mahomes. This should be the priority. You have Mahomes. Don't piss him off, right? Don't make him go play year after year with second-rate wideouts like the Patriots did. The arrogance, and this is when I hear Bob Kraft say, well, Belichick's arrogant. I think he was arrogant in the sense that, like, I don't have to make Tom Brady happy. We're the Patriots. You don't want to play for the Patriots? Go someplace else. I know the Chiefs don't view Patrick Mahomes that way right now. Maybe one day they will. You want to know how you show it? One, pay him. Two, make sure the offense is humming. And then the third reason to bump up that wideout spot is because so many times the game comes down to the last drive. And the Chiefs could consistently score on that last drive till this year. Now, the good news is they spent wisely and had a defense that could stop the other team's last drive. But that's harder to do than it is score on the last drive when you have Patrick Mahomes if you give him weapons. So, yes, Andrew, they should prioritize wideout.
Gotcha. So my second question, listening to that press conference, was Seth, I believe, asked him specifically about the wide receiver grouping and the offensive tackle grouping, which I think majority of people who follow the Chiefs believe those are their two probably most important positions of need. And then I think Veach went into, like, linebacker and halfback and stuff like
no,
that.
No, he went into D-line. So if there's an Andrew, D-line, I'm going to let you go because I got to cut out here real quick. But and we'll talk more about it with Danny here in a minute. But he brought up D-line, which if you've listened to this program, that is what we have told you. If it's not wide out or offensive tackle, it'll be D-line. Unsolicited, he brought up D-line. He actually said running back and linebacker are weak.
All right, how many catchers have won an American League batting title? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.